Okay, good evening. We are peeling back the parsha again, what we love to do this year. And we are talking in Parshat Vayera. Parshat Vayera, I have to be honest with you, we literally could spend the entire year just on this parsha. It is so jam-packed with topics that need explanation, that need analysis. Even at the very beginning, which we're not going to talk about, the story of God. Visiting Avraham, and Avraham is there at the entrance of the tent, and he's looking for travelers. So God sends him these three travelers, and we know the whole story that that Avraham welcomes the guests, right? I had the opportunity this earlier last week with my Frederick brew crew, with my Frederick teens. I gave them the first 15 sentences of the parsha. That is the source 101 of the mitzvah of doing this mitzvah of chesed. This is the source of Avram teaching us about providing and hospitality. And we went through it verse by verse. And you should have seen the look on their faces when we analyzed it. We could spend an entire class just on that. And then you turn the page and you have the story of Avram learns about what God's impending destruction of the city of Sodom, Sodom and Amorah, in English, Sodom and Gomorrah. Okay? And here you have a negotiation. You think peace in the Middle East is easy? Imagine this conversation between Avraham and God, and they're haggling like they do in the Israeli shuk. Well, how about if we find 50? How about 45? Would you consider 40? How about 30? Don't be angry. How about 20? I feel like we're watching the first Jewish negotiation in the shuk. Fine. God says, that's it. We're done. We got it down to 10. If I can find 10, I won't destroy. The very next chapter, we're on the verge of Sodom being destroyed because you can't even find 10 righteous people. We go through our story about Sodom being destroyed. And that's really what I want to talk about tonight. It's really a wild story. What happens? You have two angels. Just as a, I guess, is just a take a step back. The beginning of the parsha, God sends three angels to Abraham. Right? If you recall the story, the three travelers, our sages teach us they were angels in disguise. Okay? Why three angels? We've brought this concept up before. No angel can multitask. That is a uniquely human trait. We have the ability to multitask because we can have more than one job at any given moment. An angel cannot. An angel's entire existence is its mission. If it doesn't have a role, if it doesn't have a mission to fulfill, it doesn't exist. It's not like there's a whole Like in, I don't think they have this anymore, but we used to have at every train station or airport, used to have a long line, a queue of taxis, right? And the next guy comes out, get in the taxi, you go to the next one, and the next one pulls up. That's not how it works up in heaven. It's not a queue of angels just waiting for the next job. And sure enough, the guy who died 6 years ago, who finally earned his wings, he's in line. He gets the next job and he says, hey, you know what your job is? You get to inspire the growth of the grass in Adamstown. Hey, have a great day, right? It doesn't work that way. Every angel's existence is its job. So God has a job for an angel. It is, so to say, brought to existence, into existence. It does its job and then it ceases to exist. There are certain angels, obviously, who have perpetual jobs. Those are the ones we're more familiar with, like Raphael, Raphael. What's his job? Anybody know?
Are they the ones that sit up with their heads?
Healing?
Nope. What is it?
Healing?
That is correct. From the word refuah, like you wish somebody refuah shalema. May you feel better, have a complete recovery. Raphael, from the word refuah, is the angel in charge of people's health. The angel Gabriel, he's got a perpetual job. The angel Michael, Right? These are angels' names that we're familiar with because they're around all the time. Okay?
Uriel,
Uriel
okay.
is definitely one that's even higher. Okay. So you have these three angels that come to visit Abraham. Why three? Because they each have a separate job. The one job that is very pertinent to that story is the one who's going to heal Avraham. He had just had his circumcision. And to inform them of the impending pregnancy and ultimate birth that Sarah is going to have a child named Yitzchak. Once that job is done, the next story, the Torah tells us, the two angels came to Sodom. And Rashi immediately comments and says, why two? What happened to number three? The answer is he did his job. He's not needed for this job in Sodom anymore. The job in Sodom is a two-angel job, a two-man job. One to do the destruction, and the other is for what?
To save Lot.
Save Lot. That's correct. To save Lot and his family. They each have their job. So let's read our story here. Two angels came to Sodom in the evening. Lot was sitting at the gate of Sodom, and he stood up. He bows to them, and he says, come, please, come into my servant's house, spend the night, wash your feet. Sound vaguely familiar? Sounds Avraham just did that a chapter ago, right? What do you think Lot learned this from? Who? What's the relationship of Lot to Avraham?
His nephew.
That's correct. Lot is
His
Avraham's
niece.
nephew. And in whose house did Lot grow up?
Abraham.
Avraham and Sarah. That's exactly right. Because if you remember, 2 weeks ago in Parshas Lech Lecha, Avraham starts his journey. Who's with him?
Vote.
Lot. That's correct. So they're spending a lot of time. And he learns this ideal of welcoming in guests. Now, this is important. This is not so favorable in the eyes of the Sodomites. The people of Sodom are not in favor of this, as we will see. He begs them to come, and he said, and the angels say, no, we'll stay out in the square. They're not interested in coming in. He urges them, okay, fine. They come to his house, and he goes ahead and he provides this tremendous feast for them. Yes, I know, Susan. He gives them matzah too. Make a note of it. I got it. Okay? I knew you were thinking it. Tell me I'm wrong. Nope. You have to know your people. You just got to know your people. Okay. Okay. Soon as they get comfortable, there's a knock at the door. The people of Sodom found out that he took in guests. How dare you? Do you not know the laws of Sodom? The laws of Sodom are very clear. We provide no hospitality to people. What a crazy town. They come out, Lot's, and they say to Lot, we're the men who came to you tonight. Listen to these words. Bring them out to us that we may know them. That we may know them? What does that mean? Yeah,
Sure.
Michelle's shaking her head. She's like, no, that doesn't sound too help. That doesn't sound too kosher.
Rape.
Yeah, it does. It means sodomy. It means to go ahead and to have relations. You say, where are you getting that from? I'll show you very simply. Let's remember chapter, whatever it was, 2, 3 in the Torah, where Adam and Chava have children. You remember the famous phrase? And Adam knew his wife. And she bore and had a child, you know? So when we're younger, we say that verse and we give a little wink. And Adam knew his wife, right? But we're a little bit more mature than that. Why would the Torah use a terminology of knowledge when it comes to the most intimate act between a husband and a wife? Or in this case, in a most disgusting way, but it means in a sexual encounter. Why would the Torah use a word of "and he knew" or "let bring them out so we may know them"? A little strange word, isn't it? Think about it. I'm not done with you guys yet. I'm just teaching you to read the verses and question. Marty's already discussing it. He and Janet have it all worked out. Fine, perfect. Okay. Lot goes out to the entrance. He closed the door behind them and he starts negotiating with them. No, don't harm them. Don't listen. If you're looking for that kind of experience, I have some daughters. I don't want to even go down this road. How a father can offer this. But that's what he does. He offers his daughters, but don't harm the guys. Don't harm the men. Don't harm my guests. They say, no, stand back. We want them. So they push and they push, and the angels reach out and they pull Lot back inside and close the door. They save Lot. Okay, we can read through this, all of this. The angels say, "Hey, Lot, the city is going to be destroyed. We're here to save you. We have to save you. Go round up your daughters, round up your sons-in-law, and it's time to go." Lot goes to his family, and they basically think he's lost his mind. Are you kidding me? This is Garden of Eden 2.0. Everything is beautiful. It's lush. It's a beautiful grazing area for our animals. We are doing financially so well. This is like a dream come true. You want us to leave? Why? Because God is going to destroy it? I find, a phrase one of my kids kept telling me, right? I don't know about that, right? I don't know. I like, really? You're going to believe this? They don't buy it. Sure enough, it's time to go. And he's lingering. I'm fast forwarding here. Finally, they say, "We got to go. It's going to happen." He says, "No, we can't go that far. You want us to go that far? No, we need to go someplace closer. We just, fine." They concede. "We'll just go to the city of Tsoar, just outside where Sodom is. But we got to hurry because we can't do anything that we're supposed to in terms of the destruction of the cities until you get there." Fine. What happens?
Wasn't there something about money involved?
It is all about money. That's
That
true.
Lot wanted money, was wouldn't leave because he was owed money or something.
It absolutely could be. I'm sure there's some medrash like that. It because the people who live in Sodom, it's all about, as we'll see, about material well-being. That's all they care about. So if I earn the money and I'm doing extremely well financially, I don't want to give it up. We'll see. Hold on to that thought. But here I'm going to read you. The sun rose upon the earth, and Lot arrived at Tsoar. Now Hashem had caused sulfur and fire to rain upon Sodom and Amorah from Hashem out of heaven. He overturned these cities and the entire plain, and with all of the inhabitants of the cities, the vegetation of the soil. His wife looked behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. What? Okay, we heard this in Hebrew school, and I'm sure it made for a great laugh. And I'm sure it was like, "Oh, I can't wait to tell my mommy and daddy about this one. This is a great story." And we grew up with this. But now I'm asking you, as mature adults, what the heck is that? What is going on here? She looks behind, and she turns into a pillar of salt. Why? What did she do that was so wrong? Now it's true, I didn't read the verse, but one of the instructions that the angels said was, "We're leaving, we're fleeing, do not turn around." So that's true. So she went against that. But in the scope of things, what is so severe? So she looked. Come on, folks. Have you never taken a peek at something you're not supposed to? We all do it. It's natural. You want to see what's going on, right? It's my wife taught me something very interesting. She refused to watch any videos about any kind of destruction, carnage, or God forbid, what happened on October. She refused to watch it. Why? Because she didn't want to become desensitized to how severe this is. Okay, but in the scope of things, so she looked. Is this the end of the world? And even if you say it was a terrible tragedy, it was a terrible thing that she did, a travesty of sorts, why is the punishment turning into a pillar of salt? I don't know. Make it like the story of Vashti and the story of Queen Esther. Have her grow a tail. I don't know. Break out in spots and let her have acne at the age of 51. I don't care. Like, come up with something. Vasepis, why specifically a pillar of salt? Like, of all things. So there's a lot that we need to talk about. Go ahead,
Isn't
Jay.
salt sort of a bitter, considered a bitter, like you sprinkle it on the challah, right? And so it's a bitter piece to sort of complement the sweetness, right?
Let's go with that. It doesn't explain why that, of all things. Turner, if you want to go down the bitter, make her into maror. Take the bitter herb from Passover. Let her be the first piece of parsley. I don't know. The first romaine lettuce. I don't know. Turn her into something that's intrinsically bitter. Salt has so many wonderful qualities. It brings out the flavor. I mean, we use salt to enhance the food, not to make it more bitter. So
It
it begs the
preserves.
paper a little bit more, huh?
It preserves.
It's a pres it's a pre it's a preservative. That is true. So we're gonna get there. So let's do it this way. We have a lot to cover. I want to break this into two parts. The first, I think, is a great explanation that pieces it together. And then, as I've been accustomed to the last few weeks, I'm going to expand your brain cells until you get a headache on something much deeper. Okay? That's the itinerary, the agenda for tonight. Okay. So let's start with the following. Many people, let me start differently. We all have the custom, and the right way to do it is that when we sit down to eat a bread meal, we wash our hands. We do netilat yadayim. We wash our hands before the meal. Two to the right, two to the left. Boom, we're ready to go. Three to the right, three to the left, different customs. Okay. Why?
Charity.
Okay, so do that for every meal. When I'm going to sit down and eat mac and cheese. Oh my God, you know the spiritual loftiness of mac and cheese? Come on, Robin. I'm joking,
Well, Brad, Brad
right?
was like, we talked about this.
Why specifically a bread meal?
That was like
Okay,
enhancing.
good. What else? What might it be representative of? Where else was there washing in old times?
Abraham.
Feet.
Yeah,
Hospitality.
Avram and the feet. Think about divine service.
Okay.
The Kohen's
Thank
walk.
you. Exactly. There you go, Sid. That the Kohen, every day when he came to do his work, when he came to do the service in the temple, it was an absolute requirement for him to wash his hands and feet. Why? And one of the reasons, it's not just divine service, he would have to make sure that he remained in a state of purity, because he would eat holy items. Either he ate from the offerings or bread, he would get flour, he would get wheat, right? From all of us non-Kohens, we would give our tithes and give the Kohen his piece. He would eat what we call in Hebrew truma. Truma is special bread or special food that's baked and made on a higher spiritual level because it's done in a state of purity. For a Kohen to eat that, his hands have to be pure. So he would wash his hands. We today, even though we don't give the challah, the truma to the Kohen, we still keep that custom alive. And therefore, we wash our hands prior to the meal, reminiscent of what the Kohen used to do prior to his service. Yes? Okay. Fine. But what many people are not aware of is that many have the custom to wash their hands at the end of the meal. Not necessarily the fancy two to the right, two to the left full cup. Maybe some of you have heard the term. It's called Mayim Achronim, the afterwater. Achron means at the end. Mayim Achronim. Just as a show of hands, anyone know or heard of what this? Anybody?
Talked
Okay.
about this once before, don't remember.
Did I? It's amazing. How long have we been learning, Robin?
5 years-ish.
No.
For me and you, it was 6 years
It's got to
maybe.
be more than that. This Frederick group and I, we go back now. It's probably 17, maybe 18 years.
I've been in like 6 years maybe.
Yeah. Is this the one that because you don't want to get something in your eyes, the food
Yeah,
you
this is
eat?
where we're going. Excellent, Fred. Good. So there is this idea of washing at least our hands, our fingers, from at the end of the meal. It's known as Mayim Achronim. Why? The Talmud says because there is something called Melach Sedomit, Sodom salt, Sodomite salt, salt from Sodom. That what? Shemesame et ha'enayim, that could blind the eyes. On the simple level, the sages were concerned that people used to cook with all different kinds of salt, I was in my pantry the other night trying to organize stuff, and I see this bottle. It says Pink Himalayan Salt. I haven't the foggiest idea why Zvi Tuchman has in his pantry Pink Himalayan Salt. Not a clue. Maybe Mrs. T knows. I don't know. But maybe back then, the old Zvi Tuchman would walk into the pantry and there was a big bottle of green sodomite salt. I don't know what color it was, right? But there was a bottle of so they cooked with it. But it was dangerous that if you got on your fingertips or whatever, right, and you touched your eyes, it could be damaging to your eyes. And therefore, the sages say that at the end of the meal, before you get up and you start touching everything, wash your hands, mayim achronim. It's the simple understanding. But there's something much, much more because we don't have sodomite salt anymore. You can try, maybe on Amazon, they still sell it, but it's probably no more than a gimmick. Okay? What is the deeper meaning behind this concept? So, something that Jeff said. What is so terrible? Why is it that God is destroying the cities of Sodom and Amorah? What is it that's so bad? So you got to go to the beginning of this negotiation that Avram and God have. The Torah begins with the following. So Hashem said, because the outcry of Sodom and Amorah has become great, and because their sin has been very grave, I will descend and see. If they act in accordance with its outcry, then destruction. If not, then I'll know what to do. God identifies and says that the people of Sodom, the cities of Sodom and Amorah and their surrounding areas, have become so wicked that their outcry, the citizens themselves, are groaning from all of the pain and suffering, both interpersonally and obviously between man and God. God is ready to destroy. He's ready to destroy it. What's at the root of all of this? So Sodom had a problem. The people of Sodom, and I'll use the phrase, so I'll give it to you ahead of time. Sodom had a vision problem. They had warped perspectives on life. I'm not talking because they had glaucoma or because they had macular degenerate disease. They may have, but that's not what our sages are telling us. They looked at the world in an extremely narrow, selfish way. Everything was about them. Sodom, what brought Lot to Sodom in the first place? Remember, in last week's parsha, the week before, right? Avram and Lot, their herdsmen get into a quarrel, and Avram's like, forget it. We have to go separate ways. You go right, I go left. You go left, I go right. What were they fighting over? Is because Lot didn't have his herdsmen muzzle the animals when they were passing through private property. And he let them graze wherever. And Avram said, that's not right. You're stealing. And Lot had his rationalization. Ultimately, the land's going to become mine anyway. But it was all a matter of was is far mir. In Yiddish, right? What's in it for me? It's all about me. It was an extremely fertile area, the area of Sodom. That's what drew Lot there. Yeah, Jeff, you're right. It was all about the money, it was all about the greed. Right? The fact that they went ahead and they knocked on the door when they thought that they were guests, and their primary reason for knocking on the door is not to hold up and say, you shouldn't be having guests. Let us try them out. We have physical pleasures. Like, this is what's on their minds. They have a warped perspective. Right? Lot chooses Sodom. Right? People say, bring out the guests so we may know them, or the money. It's all about self-gratification, the physical desires. And therefore, you don't share your money, you don't share your wealth with guests. It's against the law. And if you're going to have a guest, the rumor, right, in the Medrash, it talks about that if they had somebody, they had one size beds. If you were a little bit taller than the bed and your feet stuck out a little, guess what they did? Yeah, exactly. They made you fit to size. They would chop off your legs. Or if you were a little on the shorter side, that's why a lot of Jews didn't go visit Sodom, right? Because we're usually on the shorter side. And they would stretch the guy so that he fit the bed. The fact that you would have different sized beds to accommodate different sized people? No. I'm not spending any extra money on that. We got a great deal from Mattress Discounter, all the same size. That's the way we're doing it. But it was all about themselves. That's the epitome of Sodom. Listen to a piece of Talmud. The Talmud says three words that I think changes everybody's perspective about their material well-being. Baruch Hashem, thank God, we're all, okay, I don't want to say that we're all super independently wealthy, but thank God we're okay. Thank God we're okay. And we want to protect the money that we have, retirement funds, we have our portfolios, and we want it to generate so that we can be taken care of. It's a wonderful thing. But if I told you, you want to know the best investment that's going to give you the greatest return? You ready for this? Take good notes on this, Robin. The best investment for your money is to give it to Rabbi T. Why is that funny? Come on, Marsha, work with me here. Right? You would look at me with somewhat skeptical. Marsha probably would just laugh in my face, but you would say, like, oh, come on, seriously. How could it be that logically the way for me to preserve my wealth is giving it away? And yet, I share with you the Talmud says three words: Melach Mamon Chaser. Melach, which is salt, i.e., the preservative for mamon, your wealth, chaser, is by diminishing it. I'll say it again. The greatest preservation of your wealth is giving some of it away. That is a Torah philosophy. In Sodom, the opposite. The preservation of your wealth is never share it. Keep it. Hide it in your mattress. Do whatever it takes, but don't give it away. That's a Sodom perspective.
Rabbi, how did Lot get into Sodom in the first place? How did they, why did they accept him in?
Great question. The Rashi himself addresses this and quotes again early sources that this story of the angels coming was the first day Lot came and he was able to convince them that he's Avraham's family and he should be given a position of prominence. And he got in that way. Rashi points it out on the first verse. Listen to this. Again, we can spend a whole year on this. I'll go to the very first verse we started. The two angels came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting at the gate of Sodom. I didn't want to point it out, but you're forcing me, Sid. Who cares? So he's sitting at the gate of Sodom. Why isn't he at home? Why is the Torah telling me that he's sitting at the gate of Sodom? Who the heck sits at the gate of Sodom? You know who sits at the gate? An
I think
officer. A prominent person is there to make sure the laws are kept and nobody's coming in, right? Rashi tells us, listen to these words. Let me read you the Rashi. Okay, Yashav, Oso Hayom, on that very day, Minuhu Shofet Aleihem, he was appointed as a judge on them. He got in. He wiggled his way in, not as a guest, but he earned a position that they're willing to take. The same way, perhaps, that Paro was thrilled to have Yosef when he found out who he was. And he was even more thrilled when he found out that Yosef was bringing his whole family. Because if I got one economist who saved all of Egypt, imagine if I got the whole clan. So, yeah, Lot got himself a position, and that's how he got in. Not as a guest. But great question, great point. Okay. So Sodom has this perspective all about themselves. Okay. Perhaps that's the reason why we call It, we call it Sodom Salt, Melach Sodomis. Why? Because it blinds your eye, not just physically, it blinds your eye to a true perspective. You are no longer looking correctly. You need corrective lenses when you partake of the Sodom mentality, the Sodom ideology. Partaking of the Sodom ideology is not just harmful in general, it targets your eyes because you're not seeing the right perspective about how you handle finances, of how you handle the money. Therefore, when we sit down to eat, which is an indulgence of physical pleasure, the first thing we do at the beginning of the meal is we wash our hands, reminiscent of the Kohanim getting ready to do a divine service. Eating is not only a physical pleasure, it provides a spiritual nourishment as well, if you do it right. If you have it with the right food, you make the right bracha, you elevate the whole meal, you sing Zemirot on Shabbos, you say a Devar Torah at the meal. It's not just an opportunity to fill your belly, it's an opportunity to have an elevation in spiritual terms as well. So we begin our meal, we wash our hands like the Kohanim. But despite the preparation and the involvement in eating, unfortunately, does reduce that sense of holiness to some degree. So to counteract that negative influence, we wash our hands. So to say, washing off that concept, that ideology of eating just for physical pleasure, like Sodom would do, we wash our hands of it so we not be negatively influenced by our in our perspective, to wash away the Sodom vision that blinds us. It's also interesting, you remember when we did discuss the mitzvah of washing hands, remember when we did the Jewish home, right? One of the mitzvahs I think we talked about was getting ready to eat the meal. And we talked about that after you wash your hands, what do you do with your hands? Anybody remember? Good, excellent. We turn them up and we explain the water should run down and not the other way around. However, when it comes to Mayim Achronim, it's the exact opposite. You wash your finger and the water should slide downward, specifically. Maybe that's the reason why. Right? To turn away from recognizing, oh, it's all about what I do with my hands, what I can accomplish. It's about me. I turn my hands down, turn it away. Because that's a Sodom ideology. It's about me, my gratification, and what I do. What happened with Lot's wife? What happened? Why did she turn around? Why did she truly turn around? Our sages tell us that she couldn't let go of the Sodom ideology. She wanted another, oh, longing. Oh, but I don't really want to go. I like this philosophy. I like this idea of being about me. What pleasures it serves me. The angels, why did they come up with this law? Why did they tell them, don't turn around? Right? It became a big hit in the 80s. Right? Come on, you don't know that? Don't turn around. Okay, whatever. Fine. Right? That's where it originated. It was the angels. So the name, the group, it was a duo. It was Gavriel and Michal. That was the name of the duo that came up with that one. Okay? Why did they tell Lot and his family not to turn around? It's not just because they were undeserving, which Rashi does quote, that you don't have the right. You're not being saved on your own merit. You're being saved because of Avraham, right? So you don't have it's a little chutzpah, right? To say, oh, let's see. Oh, see you, buddy. Nice knowing you, right? You deserve to be killed also. You're not such a great. So that's the simple understanding that they shouldn't turn around because it's not appropriate. You should be part of the trouble, right? But on a deeper level, the angels were telling them, don't turn around. Why? Because the reason why Sodom is being destroyed is because of that selfish attitude. It's all about me that ideology about my serving my pleasures, and that's what this world is all about, not reaching out to others, don't turn around. Sever all ties with that ideology. Move away. It's not good for you. But she couldn't do it. She couldn't resist. She wanted to still connect with it. She identified with that Sodom philosophy of not sharing with others. And therefore, she turned around to stay connected. Perhaps, and that's what I think what Jake was referring to, right? In terms of it being a preservative, why into a pillar of salt? Why not a pile of salt? Think about it, like a pillar, big column of salt. Why? Yeah, perhaps it's a permanent reminder. It's a permanent reminder of her not willing to change, right? And she's stuck and is preserved in that self-gratification mode. It's a monument that says, here lies someone who couldn't let go of it. It brings a whole new understanding. When we go ahead and we wash our hands at the end of the meal, it's a reminder. The eating, yeah, I have to fill my belly. I need my energy. That's how God created us. Our body needs food. I'm with you. However, it's not all about the food. It's not all about the pleasures. It's not all about the gratification. There's something much more. This is, I think, on the first level of what's going on here specifically. But there's something much more. You with me so far? Any questions on this part? No? Okay. Let's move on to part two then. Let's take a much more fundamental question. Going back again, taking a step back. Why did Avraham, in the very beginning of his journey, take Lot with him? Why? I get it, and that's what the Torah told us, right? The beginning of Lech Lecha, the opening phrase. Hashem said to Avram, go free yourself from your land, from your relatives, and from your father's house to the land that I shall show you, and I will make you of you a great nation. I will bless you. This should sound familiar, right? And make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who curses you, I will curse. All the families shall bless you. So, was he commanded by God who to take? No. Next sentence. So Abram went as Hashem had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. Why? Why is Avram allowing Lot to come with him?
Family.
He doesn't take his father. He Lot, doesn't take his brother.
Lot was that his dad had passed, meaning his brother, like Abraham's brother. His dad had passed, so Lot was sort of like a, I don't want to say orphan, but Lot did not have a father, and he was going to be a father figure, and I think he wanted him to be like a disciple, like a mentor to him.
I'm with you 100%. I love that, and that is a true answer. But it still begs the question, why is Avraham... What, let me say it better. Why is the Torah telling us that piece of information? Okay, I'll figure it out. He must have come with Avraham because there's a conversation later on between Avraham and Lot. Or, make it better, maybe God could have arranged that Lot is saved some other way, and at some point he meets up with Avraham somewhere on his journey. It almost sounds like that Avraham is going out of his way specifically to take Lot with him. There's something about Lot that Avraham sees and needs to keep with him. I'm going to say it, but don't ask me too many questions. The Zohar tells us that Avraham was given divine spirit to see that a future descendant of Lot, someone who maybe you can think of who it is, but he knew, right? It was something he knew that someone was destined to be a descendant of Lot and needed to be protected. Lot needed to be protected so he could be the progenitor of this historical figure.
King David
is correct. You're like, whoa, King David. Okay, the Zohar says that Abraham saw Beruach HaKodesh with divine spirit that King David was destined to be disabled, and therefore, for King David to become a reality in history, Lot has to be saved. You'll forgive me, and I hope I don't get punished after 120 years for this, but when I saw this, it reminded me of the Terminator, of where his job was to protect, right? I don't even remember their names, but to protect, why? Because in the future, this is the kid that's going to, whatever. Some of you who know what I'm talking about are like, oh yeah, I get that, okay. The rest of you are like, I don't know. I've never heard of it. But those of you who know what I'm talking about, does that make sense? Yeah, okay, perfect. So, and again, Hashem, I'm sorry, but that's what came to my mind, okay? Avraham has a mission because he knows we need David HaMelech. We need King David. For King David to become a reality, Lot has to make it through. And I, Avraham, am going to do whatever it takes to save Lot. Therefore, number one, he takes him on the journey. Number two, right? Even after they have their quarrel and they need to part ways, Avraham doesn't go too far. He doesn't say, you go to Africa, I'm going to Asia. Right? It's not what happened here. We're talking about some distance, but Avram's keeping an eye on him. How do I know that? Because what happens? The War of the Kings, four kings, five kings, who's taken as a captive? Lot. Lot is taken captive. What's Avram's next move?
He goes to war.
He goes to war. Why? He's got no skin in the game here. Oh, but he does.
He's got to save Lot.
He's got to save Lot. Not just because he's his nephew. That's the simple reading. But this is the advanced class, ladies and gentlemen. There's more to this story. It's not just to save Lot for Lot's sake. It's to save Lot because of King David ultimate. It also explains, perhaps. Let's go through Lot's mind for a moment. Why? If you knew, you grew up in Avram's house, and you do have a sense of right and wrong, you have an idea of ethical values, you have ideas. Proof is, he's willing to risk his neck to go bring in these two strangers. So he does get it to some degree. And they tell him, point of fact, that the city is going to be destroyed, and we're here to save you. Stop. Ask yourself, if God forbid you were in a situation where you're told that there's trouble coming and I'm here to save you, how much of a fight are you going to put up? Not much. Lot is negotiating with them. I don't know. I don't know if I can make it that far. Are you out of your mind? We're here to save you, right? A normal person instinctively wants to stay alive, especially after seeing the angels, what they did to the townsfolk, making them all blind and they couldn't find the door anymore. I didn't even talk this part out, right? Why is Lot putting up a fight here? Lot knows that he has a future descendant too. He knows that David is going to come from him. He knows. Perhaps he knows. I don't want to say for sure, but perhaps he knows. And therefore, he's not worried because he knows he has protexia. I'm not gonna die in this one. Not so fast, Mr. and Mr.'s angels. We're pretty good. Okay, fine. We got to go. How about my kids? Come on, let's get them. Let's get them. Dad, I think you lost your mind. I know. It sounds really weird. I know. These two strangers came and they told me God's going to destroy and he wants us all to go. Dad, you got to get off this stuff, man. Really. I mean, just, and Lot is like, I know. And he starts arguing with the angels. I would hightail out of there. I would just be gone. But Lot doesn't have this pressure because he's like, do you know who I am? You know who my great-great-great-great-great-great-grandson is? King David. Nothing to worry about. And they say you're making a mistake because you could be harmed here. This is a dangerous situation. You cannot just rely. There's no guarantees at this point. God has many ways of arranging what the future should be. You may not be it. So don't mess around. Don't futz around. He tells them, listen to the words, and this is the point I want to bring out. The angels say, Al tabit acharav, acharecha. Do not look behind you. Remember that? You know what that could also mean? Don't look at what's going to come after you. Don't be so self-assured that you have protection based on something future. Al tabit acharecha. Don't look that which is going to come after you. Acharecha could mean behind you, but it could also mean achar, after. Don't look to say, I don't have anything to worry about because I have a future descendant. The angels warn him, do not look that way. It will not necessarily be guaranteed. Rely on saving yourself. You have to do it. Why? Because maybe you're going to get swept up together with all of the troubles. There's no guarantee that you're going to stay. You're going to stay alive. Yeah, maybe it's destined for King David to come from you, but you can't rely on that. What does the Torah tell us? That when they're finally leaving, Lot's wife looks beyond them. She looks acharav. She looks behind him. That's the exact terminology. She peered behind him. Rashi says, from behind Lot. Duh. What is Rashi's comment here? No, she looked behind Sarah. Of course she looked behind Lot. That's who she's running with. So she took a quick glance behind Lot. Rashi's comment would be superfluous. Unless, maybe that's not the deeper meaning of Rashi here. Maybe she's looking what is coming after Lot. She's looking, who's coming after Lot? Who's the descendant? King David. Oh, she's willing to look beyond. She thought everything's going to be okay for her as well. Why? Because if King David's coming out of Lot, well, who's that? Who's going to bear the child that's going to, obviously, that's me. I'm his wife. So she thinks she's also got it made in the shade. It's destined to come from she and Lot. So she looks what comes after Lot and she sees that King David is that future. I'm okay. I got no reason to worry. So she looks behind. She looks what comes after. Where did she go wrong?
It was the daughters.
Yeah, it doesn't come from her. Doesn't. Proof of it is, the daughters are the only ones that got saved. And Lot, another story that requires analysis, Lot lives with his daughters and conceives, they conceive from him. One of those children, right, is no name is Moav. Moav, which is a hard name to swallow because in Hebrew it means Me'av, from dad, which is, it's just brutal. Not even to have the decency to hide with some level of shame. Okay, you tell me that it was done because you didn't think anybody else was left in the world. I get it. But to name your kid that way? The second daughter, who also did this with her father, she at least had some shame, some decency. She named him Ammon. Ammon means of our nation. Okay, it's somewhat veiled. But Moav from dad? It's like, why don't you just name your kid incest? You know, just go for it. It sounds horrible, but that's what it was. A descendant of Moab is whom?
Ruth.
Ruth. The story of Ruth that we read on Shavuot, the book of Rus. She is the grandmother of David HaMelech, the great-grandmother of David HaMelech. She's the one. So the line from whom David HaMelech comes, yeah, it comes from Lot, but not Mrs. Lot. So she gazes what's behind him, meaning what comes after Lot. She assumes that she has the protection of King David, so to say, in her corner, but she's mistaken. And therefore, she does not survive. I know this is not what you intended. And you say, some of you are thinking, I should have stopped 15 minutes ago. I had you. It was great. And now I'm completely blown out of my mind. I don't even know where to begin. I accept that. However, we agreed that this semester, we are going to analyze the text in a way we've never done before. And my job is to show you in the wording of the Torah, the depth of what is being alluded to behind the scenes. We are peeling back significant layers of understanding. Is this, if your kids, grandkids, whatever, your cousins ask you for a storyline, do not, I repeat, do not tell them this part about King David and the future. They're not going to understand that. They're not. You, maybe. Them, no chance. Tell them the storyline like you did, that she looked, and now you have perhaps a deeper understanding why specifically a pillar of salt, good, preservation, you get rid of the Sodom ideology, and we move on for the day. I want to make sure that we're just, whether you fully comprehend it or not, is it at least clear that what's being conveyed? And that is, I'll just summarize. The angels tell Lot and his family that they have no right to look what is going to come beyond them. And that's a reference to King David. Where did I get that from? Where did the Zohar get it from? If you look back, why did he take Lot on his journey? Because he had to protect Lot. It wasn't just out of the kindness of his heart, Robin, that he, you know, Lot's without a father and he wants to be a role model. That's true. But there's something much deeper that's going on behind the scenes. And that is, he has to protect Lot so that there ultimately be a King David. The rest of the story of what happens in Sodom and why the Lot feels he doesn't have to run away. He doesn't feel the urgency because he feels he has that protection. Mrs. Lot is like, oh yeah, I see that future for us too. I got nothing to fear. And so she wants to stay and look. No, doesn't work that way. This is perhaps the deeper meaning of when we talk about, right? We ask three basic questions. What did she do that was so wrong? So she looked back. It's not the end of the world. Oh, but it is. Because if it's going to change your mentality, if it's going to say that I can live amongst the wicked and I will be saved, why? Because you know who my great-grandchild's gonna, doesn't work that way. You cannot live your life that way. We have to be the best we can be. Even if somehow you had a magic eight ball and you asked that question, the best question you could possibly say and say, do my great-great-grandkids have any hope? Right? They're going to be the next leaders of the Jewish people. And it comes back with a yes. You better make sure you're darn well that you are living the right life. Do not rest on their laurels either. That's where she messed up. She was living on King David's laurels. And the angel said, you cannot do that. If this area is filled with immorality, it's filled with self-gratification, it's filled with greed, it's filled with all of the negative traits of what the Torah is teaching us not to be like, then you must flee. But you say, I can do. No, you cannot. You need to sever ties with this and move away. Change the behavior. She wasn't willing to do that, and she becomes a monument of preservation of those values forevermore. Just as a side note, where is the city? Where was the city of Sodom and Amorah? Give me some geographic location within the city, within Israel. Tell me what it's near.
The Jordan River.
Nope. I mean, yes, but no.
Nablus?
Nope.
Dead Sea area.
That's exactly right. The Dead Sea. Why is the Dead Sea the Dead Sea? It's filled with
salt.
That's correct. All of those sulfur, those deposits. That's the area, ladies and gentlemen.
Every tour guide will show you the pillar of salt.
Yeah. What? Say that again.
Every tour guide will show you the pillar of salt.
Yeah, whatever. I don't know if it's the real deal, but somebody back in 1948 did it. You know, I don't know, but whatever it is, that's the area of Sodom and Amorah, and that's that is the everlasting memorial. That salt, that's where it's at. It's a fascinating story. It's wild. And I'm literally just on the tip of the Saltberg, literally.
What do you think of this?
Right? There's so much depth to this. Go ahead, fire away. I know there are questions. There's got to be.
I got two questions.
Go ahead.
Well, I have more than two questions, but I'll start with the two. Okay. One is, so since Lot lived in their house, correct? And did he live there? And so he lived there when Isaac was there, correct? Or
No,
no?
they had already parted ways.
Yeah.
They had already parted ways, didn't they? They part ways in Parshas Lech Lecha.
And when did Lot start living there?
At some point, he was living in Sodom at that point.
So they were, so Isaac was never, they had parted way, Isaac
Not Isaac.
Isaac and Avraham had parted way. The Akedah had already, the bite
No,
that
that hasn't happened yet. That's at
hasn't
the end of
happened.
the parsha.
That
I,
hasn't.
Isaac's 37 years old at the binding at the Akedah.
Yes, where his what why is he not mentioned? So he's
Who's he?
Isaac.
Isaac.
Why is he not mentioned where? In the story of Lot?
Yes.
He, what Lot's living in Sodom. When Isaac is born, Lot's not around.
When
The
Isaac.
beginning of the parsha, let's do it this way. The beginning of the parsha, God sends the angels to inform them that in a year's time, Isaac's going to be born. Yes?
Oh, yes. Oh, okay. Okay. Got
In
it. Okay.
between, before Isaac's born, you have the whole story of Sodom and Amorah.
Okay.
Lot's not there. Lot's
Okay.
living in Sodom. After the story of Sodom and Amorah, and after all of that, and it's destroyed, and Lot is saved, and he got right now. Avram and Sarah go on, and they move to Gerar, and she's abducted in another story, and then you have the story of the Akedah.
So it Lot has already chosen to live in Sodom, yes?
Yes.
Isn't that a little problematic
Yep.
in terms of King Dave?
Yep.
Like, why?
Yes.
Okay. So
Yes.
I would like to know more about that. But then there, the other question
But one
is,
second, the answer is that Avram was keeping an eye on him. When Hashem informs him that he's going to destroy Sodom, Avram starts negotiating. Why? Not just out of the kindness of his heart to save others. He knows his nephew's there. He's got to save him.
isn't there also some sort of like element of like I'm living in a place that I don't necessarily like. Maybe I'm trying to do it for the goodness of the people who were there, right?
Ooh, Lot?
Lot, right? Like maybe he's there to, and some of it's rubbing off on him, right?
Well,
I'm just thinking kind of outside the box here, but I mean,
I'm
why
with
would he
you.
choose to live there, right? And
So,
if he's a good, he's not Abraham, but
be a good role model and have a positive impact.
right. You
Yeah.
know, that
You're
spark in
playing, Jake,
people.
you're playing with fire.
Well, good.
No. Not, most of the time you get burned.
And brimstone, yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
And the proof of it is, the proof of it, I feel, to me that what's a resounding counter argument to your point is that is when the angels come and say, we're here to save you, they say it's not in your merit. It's in the merit of Avram.
okay.
What do you mean? If Lot's really a good guy and he's doing good work, and he's living out there and to be a good role model, then he should deserve to be saved on his own merit. Why in the merit of Abraham?
What do we know about Lot after this incident? There's no record of him after that time. We don't know how long he lived, when he died. He just disappears, basically.
That's it. But again, it's a good point, right? The Torah is not a history book. I'm sure in the history books it would tell you Lot then moved to wherever and he lived another whole life and he became a wealthy man, whatever. But it has zero relevance for us. So the Torah doesn't have to record it. I venture to say, Monroe, that in the Midrash it probably does add a little bit more, but I'm not familiar with it. But you're right. In the written record of the Torah, Lot's that's it. End of that story.
Rabbi, the timeline doesn't seem to fit right. You said that when the angels got there, Lot was sitting outside the gate, and that he wasn't living there.
Yeah, he
had
was.
He had just been appointed as the judge that day, the day the angels came.
So was he living there before that?
He must have gone there because when they parted ways, he went to that area. Turn back, if you have the book open there, right? Turn back in Lech Lecha of where they have their disagreement. Take a look in chapter 13. Abram went up from Egypt with he and his wife and all that was his and Lot with him to the south. Abram was very laden with livestock, silver, and gold, proceeded on his journeys from the south to Beit El, to the place where his tent had been at first, between Beit El and Ai, to the site of the altar, which da, 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 da. And Lot also went with Abram's flock, cattle, and the land could not support them dwelling together, for their possessions were abundant, and they were unable to dwell together. There was quarreling between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot, da 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 da. So he says, let there not be strife, let's go and part ways. Verse 10, so Lot raised his eyes and saw the entire plain of the Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere, parentheses, before Hashem destroyed Sodom and Amorah. This is a great fertile area he wants to go, like the Garden of Hashem, like the land of Egypt, going towards Tzoar. Lot chose for himself the whole plain of the Jordan, and Lot journeyed from the east. Thus they parted one from his brother. He moves.
But that doesn't explain how he was accepted by the
I don't know. Somehow he convinced them. I don't know the answer how he convinced them.
He was
but he
wealthy.
Was living there.
He
to
was
the
wealthy.
Extent that he became a judge.
Rabbi.
Listen, I don't mean this in a political way. I really do not. And don't take it that way, right? But we are living in a country where people who are here illegally get to be prominent in certain places and certain rule. It does happen. Somehow Lot made it through. And he worked his way up through the echelons of society.
Just a comment or just a thought as far as that goes. I mean, this thing with the salt and the money, it was the time in the Romans there. And I'm not sure how far back, you know, that the value of salt was that's how people were paid in salt. So perhaps, you know, Lot was so focused on the money, and here all of a sudden she's turned into a pillar of salt. But what did he get him? All this money that he had, really, what that he had, it just went away. It just dissolved. There was no value to it.
Yeah, but he may have bought himself into Sodom, because the whole reason he had to leave Abraham was because
so wealthy.
He was so rich.
Right.
He had so many animals. He had to leave.
But he lost his wife. That's what I was getting at. I mean, what he had this, but you know, his
correct.
Wife.
And I think Jeff is just addressing
the salt.
Sid's point.
What's the value of that?
Right. Sid's,
how could he
he's
spend his wife?
Sid's point of how did he make it into that society? The answer is he had all of the same values. He had plenty of money, plenty of everything. Come join us.
So, Rabbi, do you?
Hang on, Michelle. There's people that. So, I think it's Susan, then Anne, then Mike.
One second. Is it the same? I see the hands. I got it. But Michelle, is this a continuation of the conversation?
Yeah. I think that you know, maybe Lot didn't really know about, you know, that he's going to be the person for David. But Isaac wasn't born yet, and Abraham and Sarah were old. He probably thought, hey, this is going to be mine, all of Avram's stuff. And so
he did think that was the whole rationale he gave as to why he let his animals graze, because he said, Avram and Sarah, they don't have any kids, and God promised the land to Avram. I'm the next of kin. It's all going to be mine. So it's as if it's mine already. So Lot had that mentality already. That's true. That is true.
Well, he probably wasn't worried about being in there, because he thought he was next. He thought he was going to be the next one.
Right. I agree. Oh, I think that's a valid point. Anne, what were you going to say?
I'm just trying to digest the thought. Just a minor question. I've been wondering the time frame. Did Abraham take Lot under his wing before Sodom?
Yes. When he
Before.
first started
Did
his
David
journey.
intervene when he was in Sodom to keep him protected?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Robin.
Susan actually had the second question first, so
You go ahead.
are you sure? Okay, I don't want to jump. So 2 points. Well, one question and then 1 point. The question was when, if I wrote it down right, the last thing you said was that the monument of that the pillar was the monument to preserve the values forever. You're talking about preserving the negative values to warn us, right?
It's no, it's a monument that some, this is the result of someone who doesn't, is not willing to let go of those negative things. This is its demise. It's almost like a monument of negativity. This is what becomes of someone who's not willing to change and get out of that bad rut.
So it was preservation of the negative values to warn us.
Correct.
Okay. Excuse me. Then the point I wanted to make was, if I recall correctly in the story, were there sons or son-in-laws who didn't leave, the ones who said, "No, I don't believe you," and they were there, and she may have been looking back to see. Now, not to say that she still didn't have her 1 foot back in that, like those values were still negative, but back to see the sons,
Oh no.
who are also wicked. You know, and so she might still be like, "Hey, I'm gonna go back with them. The sons were still there." I'm just saying that the sons
It's
were still
first of all, it's
there.
son-in-law,
sons-in-law, not
son-in-laws.
sons. It's sons-in-law. Right.
Yeah, her
Right.
son. Yeah,
It
but
could
that's true,
be.
right? The sons were still there.
I think the answer is I don't know what she was looking at. It could be that she wanted to connect with, stay connected with. Now you're tying it to people, specific people, and I'm saying in general terms. I don't know. I can't say definitively that she was looking back about the welfare of her sons-in-law or she wanted to reconnect with it. I don't know. I do know that the general tenor of her turning around to see is a concept. It's a conceptual idea of not wanting to let go of it.
No, I understand. I just want to make the point that it was the sons-in-laws, right? Is that who it
Correct.
was? Yeah, that there were still people there, or that she, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, or that that's the reason, but that could actually connect to this, that they were still wicked and she wanted to sort of, you know, again, those values were still something that she had 1 foot still in that door of Sodom.
Okay, I think it's. I have no way of knowing.
No, I understand. I just wanted to make that point. Thank you.
Susan.
I'm thinking about the hand washing, and I just want to be clear that the when we put salt on challah for Shabbos, there's no connection with this story whatsoever, correct?
None. None
Okay.
whatsoever. Zero. The reason why we put salt on our challah is because, along the same ideas, that when we treat our table, when we treat our meal as a service, as instead of just a gastronomic affair, right? More than just feeding our bodies, then it takes on a certain level of sanctity. Well, the rule was that every single offering that was brought in the temple had salt on it. So when we sit down to have a meal, this is our form of bringing an offering on the altar. The table is like our altar, and we are going to dip it in salt, reminiscent of the offerings that were brought in the temple. On a much, much, much more significant level, the salt at the beginning.
I just needed to be reminded because we went over that in the Jewish home.
Yeah.
Yeah, but thank you.
Anne.
Just an aside, I remember all the salting of the marg from the marg bones on challah when I was a kid. It was so good. We fought over who got the biggest bone, the biggest amount. But I'm just having trouble, and there's probably no answer, wrapping my head around how there's so much about the incest and the wrongness of it that, you know, I've learned from the writings. I'm having trouble comprehending how King David could have evolved from an incestuous
It
relationship.
is, it's a great question, and you are not the only one that has grappled with this. It has been since the beginning of time. Soon as that story was recorded, that is a great question, and the commentaries have a lot to offer about it. It's not something that I can answer on one foot because you're right. It requires a much deeper dive as to what is the thought process here. Like of all people, right? I mean, the lineage of the greatest dynasty in Jewish history comes from a very, I'll use the word questionable, right? Very tainted kind of lineage. But it's not unique. How about the story of Judah and Tamar? Right? Yehuda and Tamar. There you go again. Because that also plays into all of this. There are such stories. And the question you're asking is why? Why didn't God arrange it such that the kingship or the royalty of the Jewish people comes from royalty? Let it come down with a tremendous lot. I'm going to leave it at that. It's a great question and it deserves an entire class.
Yeah, I'm beginning to
There's what to say.
yeah. And just if I may, one more little thing. So Lot was told by the angels to leave Sodom because, not like Noah, saved because he was a good man, but Lot was asked to leave because Abraham protected him.
I wouldn't say the word protected. It's because Abraham is such a great person that a courtesy is extended to his family. The Lot doesn't deserve it necessarily on his own. But because he's Avraham's nephew, he gets a little by. He gets a courtesy, and that's why he's saved.
Thank you. Yeah.
But he does get some positive traits from learning from Abraham, as we learned from the beginning, because he washed off his the feet in hospitality, right? Which is something that is
Yes.
foreign and actually prohibited in Sodom. So it's not like he's.
You're 100% right. So, Jake, I once gave a class on the complexity of Lot. That was the entire class. The
Okay.
three components of Lot, the negative, the interesting, and the positive, because he is complex. He's got all of it. He's not one-dimensional at all.
Okay. Just
So I
making
don't
sure
disagree. I don't disagree with you at all. There are definite positives about him that deserve mention. It's not for now, but I'll just point you in the right direction, right?
Right.
Lot did a tremendous thing. Remember, when Avram and when they started their journey, Sarah was taken as a captive, right? She was taken hostage, right? Using today's terminology. Yeah. And Avram, before they went down to Egypt, spoke to Sarah and Lot and came up with the whole charade to tell everybody she's my sister. Lot didn't say a word. Lot did not reveal and squeal.
Right.
That's a big plus that comes back as a tremendous positive in his in for him. And it shows itself in another place, not for tonight. But yeah, he has certain positive qualities. Unfortunately, it's overshadowed by really poor decision making of the environment in which he puts himself and really was on the cusp of destruction.
Right. So to, and I just want to sort of make a be clear too, the people of Sodom do not have those complex traits like or Gomorrah, right? None of them are the intent of the description is to describe them as people who have no positive traits. They don't have that complexity.
Listen, there aren't even 10 righteous people. And I'm sure the definition of righteous is not that they've never sinned.
Right. Okay.
Couldn't find 10.
Right. No, yeah.
I mean, we got more than that just on the Zoom call here. You know what I'm
Right.
saying? Like, it couldn't have been the bar was so hot. Couldn't be.
Right. Is that
And yet,
similar? Is it have something to do with Minion 2, or does that have nothing to do with
of
Minion?
what?
The 10 righteous people.
Have to do with a minion?
I just made the
No.
connection, like
I,
10 and 10.
not that I know of, not that
Okay,
I'm aware of.
sorry.
No.
Just brain.
Ironically, the source for the minion is actually the 10 spies
Okay.
that went and did negative stuff. And yet God refers to them as a congregation, as a group. That's one of the sources as to what's the definition of a group, a congregation. That's one of the sources. Ironically, it's from a negative story, not a positive.
Oh, I always thought it was from the other way.
What?
Always thought it was from the find 10 people. I always thought it was that was where we got the minion from. So
That,
I,
like Jake is saying,
yeah, I thought it was that way.
I'll try to look into it, but I don't recall seeing that. But again, I haven't seen it all yet. I'm working on it, but I
Can I
haven't
make
seen it all yet.
one comment about, the why would King David have come from not a perfect lineage, let's say? Throughout the Torah, in fact, this was pointed out a few times, where some of the heroes, let's just say the people, were not perfect, and yet we become better people. Isn't it possible that that's the whole, well, that's just part of the whole,
Yes. The
part
answer
of
is yes, it's possible.
You
But
see where I'm
as
going? I mean, honestly, go
no,
ahead.
there's so much more to it, but you're right,
Oh,
Fred.
yeah, but isn't that just one of the possible reasons?
Yes.
Why?
Yes, but even that requires explanation. That's
Oh.
an answer for me that's not fully satisfactory. Because
Okay.
I can get that lesson in so many other ways. Why specifically?
One
And
more.
if you really want to take it further, it's not just King David, because ultimately King David is the progenitor of Mashiach. So the
Right.
whole concept of the
Right.
Messiah that brings the world to to its completion, all that comes from this lineage.
Okay.
You got to question it. And just to say that to teach us a lesson that anybody can become great, and it doesn't. That's to me, that's too simplistic of an answer. There's got to be more to it, and in fact, there is. But the free Zoom class is almost over. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Started with you giving the money to you, so.
There you go. Remember, preserve your wealth, give it to T.
Rabbi T.
All right. All right. So then I,
Rabbi
what?
T.
Yes.
One quick question. Don't forget that Abraham had to go rescue Lot, and then when he came back, he also was interacting with the king of Saddam. So there was this thing going on there back before, too, as well.
In terms of what?
Well, I mean, Abraham's re relationship with the people of Saddam. Even before that, before this event occurred.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't call it a relationship. I mean, he Avram fair and square won all the loot from the war, including everybody and everything. And the king of
Oh.
Sodom wants to negotiate a little bit with him and whatever. That's the only interaction. He doesn't really.
Well, that could be how Lot got in with Saddam, though. Anyway.
Okay, that could be. That could be.
Yeah. Rabbi, I wanted to make actually a donation, and I wanted
I was
to
joking.
make.
No,
No, I know, but before this class, I really did want to, in appreciation for all that you teach us,
thank you.
and I wanted to do it to a cause that you would appreciate. So, could you
I'll
help
tell
me?
you what. I'll email you a link.
Yes.
What?
Yeah.
Alan, what?
Oh, Alan's saying his cause. Give it to Alan
Oh, give
now.
it to Alan. Yeah, I'll send you the link. Alan's cause is www.shoresh.com.
Yep,
That's Alan's cause. Now,
Can you send it to me what
I'll
you
send it to you. Yes, that's
okay.
very sweet of you. Thank you, Anne.
I mean, yeah.
Thank you.
Just
All right. Anything else? It's a lot to digest. I will, God willing, I will before the end of the night. I'll put this recording back on the website. So if anybody wants to review this, you're more than welcome to. It's also at the Shoresh website, Anne. Okay, under programs, that's the top of the list. It says programs, and you'll pull down to classes and whatever, and you'll find our peeled onion. That'll be the peeling back the Parsha logo, and under it will be this and the other ones that we've had so far. All right? All right. So, that being the case, I will see you all in 3 weeks. 3 weeks from tonight, God willing.
At your
And my best regards from Israel. And I hope to share some really good stories and some insights perhaps that I learned while I was there, and we'll somehow weave it into Parshas Vayetze, which I think it is that week. All right? Am I correct on that?
Have a wonderful trip.
Have a safe
Thank you.
trip.
Let me do
Thank
some
you. Bye-bye.
Safe travels.
You're very welcome. I'm just triple checking that the week I'm back, one, two, three, is, yeah, it'll be Vayetze. It'll be the Shabbos before, so you'll have a chance to have seen it ahead of time. All right? All
What's
right. Have a great night, everybody.
Thank you.